Morning.
There's certain rules to write in place if you want to make them work. You got to catch their interest early, develop a plot, get people involved in what's going on. That should be the task in the first act. The second act, well, towards the end of the first act, you might start. You want to start developing your characters. They've not only got to be somebody that your audience can understand, but that they care about, so that what happens at the end makes a difference to them. And then you've got to sort of let them evolve a little, show a growth aspect that's going on, all the while keeping the plot going, lest you lose their interest. And you've been to places where that didn't happen, and you walked out, you know, somewhere in the second act, where your mind walked out, even if your body didn't, somewhere in the second act. The third act, your normal three-act play, now I know Shakespeare uses five acts and all that stuff, but your normal three-act play, the third act is where you bring it all to a conclusion, right? If you've got a point, make your point. If you've got a trap, spring your trap. If you've got something to say, this is the time to say it. Succinctly, powerfully, let them walk out of the house with that thought in their minds. Well, that's where we are this morning. This is Act 3 of that Markan drama we've been talking about. The first act set out the structure. There are going to be three scenes. Jesus predicts the passion. The apostles do something incredibly stupid. And then Jesus teaches. The second act really developed that at some length. Took us 3 extra weeks to read all the teaching sections for the second act. It's where you put in the big character development part. Third act, you just heard it. From beginning to end, in one gospel reading. Scene 1, Jesus predicts the passion. At some length, but does it again, the third time. Notice, by the way, that we are on the way. That's a phrase that you've heard a couple times before. You should begin to catch on to it now. This is going to be important for this guy. And you'll hear it again one more time next week in the epilogue, and hopefully it will begin to go on like a light bulb at that point. That they are on the way. And he uses the same word each time. On the way. The way going up to Jerusalem. The way up to the cross. The way up to resurrection. The way of discipleship. All those overtones should be resonating. They're going on the way. And Jesus predicts the passion a third time. In so much detail this time that most commentators will say Mark probably took this from his own passion narrative. Just boiled it down and outlined it. Put it in here. Then the apostles seem to do something incredibly stupid. Remember the first time it was Peter saying, no, 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 no. And last time in the second act, they were all arguing about which one of them would be the greatest. And Jesus tried to talk them out of it. Now here we've got James and John pulling the ultimate, who shall be the greatest? Who? They want the best seats. They want to sit at his right hand and his left when he comes into the kingdom. Now he's just told them, we're going up to Jerusalem and the Son of Man is going to be put to death. And they're asking to sit at his right and his left. Not a whole lot of comprehension. So, you got a trick? Third act is the place to play it. Jesus plays it on them. You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup that I shall drink? Can you be baptized in the bath with which I shall be immersed? We can! Okay. You want it? You got it. You're in. But not for those seats. I don't have authority over those seats. The Father will take care of that. Now, this is ironic to them. They get the reverse of what they were asking for. It's even more ironic to you, because, of course, you've heard the gospel before. The gospel is not only meant to be heard, it's meant to be heard more than once. so that you can hear the first part in light of the last part, which obviously doesn't happen on the first hearing. So when you're hearing this, you're thinking, mm-hmm. And when crunch time comes, where are James and John? Way over there. They started running Thursday night, and by Friday afternoon, they haven't slowed down. These are the guys who are sure that we can drink the cup, we can do the baptism. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, of course, they will. But not this year. It takes a long time for them to come around as to what it means. And the irony, hopefully, opens itself up for you. And then, of course, the other 10. They're much more enlightened, right? No. They're indignant with James and John. Not because they missed the point, but because they beat him to the punch. Those are the seats I wanted. Jesus sits him down and begins to tell him one more time. Now, we heard 3 weeks' worth of Jesus' teaching in Act 2. Act 3, got a punch, landed. 3 verses, that's all there is. Whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be slave of all. And then the one that could be the capstone of the whole Mark and Gospel. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for the many. Well, that's it. Bang, bang, bang. You got a point to make? Make it. Mark has made his point. He set it up for Jesus to speak not just to James and John, not just to James and John and the other 10, but to you, to me. The gospel is being aimed directly at us. This is not something that applies just to them. They're not the only ones who, every time Jesus talks about the Passion, do something incredibly stupid. Ducking it completely because they misunderstand it completely. We do that all the time. We are so anxious to preserve ourselves, to advance ourselves, to be the center of our own little world, to be served, that we miss the point. Jesus is telling us, Jesus is symbolizing for us, Jesus is enacting for us who God is. God is the one who pours God's self out on us in creation, in the covenant, ultimately in the gift of the Son. Jesus is the one who pours his own life out on us in the cross. And now we're called to learn from that. Not just to learn something nice and abstract about who they are, but to learn something very practical about who we can be and who we need to become. We need to pour ourselves out on our sisters and brothers in service. To come not to be served, but to serve. To give our lives as a ransom for the many. And we need to know how much we are like those disciples. How easy it is for us to lose track of that. How quickly we drift back into this my own little world type of thinking, type of acting, type of living. And that's why this is set up so dramatically. Why it's placed square here in the center of Mark to catch our attention. Why it's done with the repetition and the emphasis. Mark knows it's an uphill struggle. It's an uphill struggle for him. It's an uphill struggle for us. But it's who God is. It's who Jesus is. And it's the only way we have to find out who we can be. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.